I have a terrible habit. I often say thank you instead of please. Don't know if you do that yourself. So, for instance, I'll give you an example. I'll use Kelvin as a name because he's picked it up on me. He says, "Kelvin, can you wash the dishes? Thank you." Slightly different from, "Can you wash the dishes, please?" Because, "Can you wash the dishes? Thank you" assumes that you're going to do them and that's it done. So I have that terrible habit of just doing that word and putting thank you. Anyone else want to confess since I've done it up front? No one's going to take the bait. Oh, someone in the back row safely can do it, so that's fine. Don't turn round. Don't invade their space. That's not allowed. Or, here's one, maybe for the drivers that are out there. How do you feel when another driver doesn't acknowledge you letting them have their way? If there's someone in, oh, listen to the tuts. And some are smiling there smugly. I didn't confess, but I do it too. I love that. So you've got this going on. It's even worse when I'm venting my anger now. So it's even worse when you give way and you knew you had the right of way and they don't acknowledge it. Ever been there? Oh, good, Denise, thank you for that. I really have, I need the love back, okay? Because I'm pouring out my heart here at the moment, okay? But it can, do you know, being thankful is, it can be a serious business because it can affect your health. It can affect how you react. You can get riled up very quickly. And it can get acute and it can get chronic and you can get disgruntled as well. And some people can do that to us as well. So, at one level, yeah, there's politeness and pleasantries, but it goes deeper and it also goes higher. So, I just want a wee bit of a reality check here, okay? Get us out of that virtual reality. Take off those goggles and look around and see the world that we're in. And Psalm 138 does that for us. Basically, I did call it an espresso psalm because it's like a psalm to go. 8 verses. Denise would be delighted. That's all she had to read. Psalm to go. All right? And the reason why I say that is it's very similar to a few other psalms that are much longer, okay? So the difficulty with it is we read it, there's a lot of meaning invested in just a few words. Okay, so let's unpack it a wee bit. Text is obviously a wee bit smaller there from what I originally thought it would be, but that's okay. It says here in verse 1, "I will praise you, Lord, with all my heart. Before the gods, I will sing your praise." Verse 1 acknowledges that there is a God and other beings, which says it there, and it talks about gods. That was probably the psalmist's perspective at that point. Eugene Peterson puts it in the Message a wee bit more comfortably for us who might see that. Ooh, what's that all about? Where he talks about the angels are listening. Now, whatever our views of the world beyond ourselves and how that might be shaped by the psalmist's awareness of his own attitude, one thing is, he knows he's been observed very closely. I don't know if you're a BBC Traitors fan at all. Okay, not many of you. That's okay. That's all right. BBC iPlayer, brace yourselves. Have a look and see what you think, and then you can cast judgment on me if you want. That's okay. I can cope with that. So, but basically, it's a reality show like any other reality show, and there's cameras everywhere. All the whispers are picked up. All the sort of juicy goss is all coming out. And we are watching. And we're getting them all. Now, God's attitude's much better than mine, just so you know. But basically what I'm saying here is that you've got here in the psalmist saying, I know I'm accountable and someone is close by and sees not just what I do, but what I think, my motivations, my very being spiritually turning us inside out. So it takes us much deeper and higher in our accountability. You see, gratitude shrivels up our self-centeredness and embraces a Christ-centeredness. The center of the universe is no longer ourselves, but is our place before God. And the psalmist gets that. So there's a connection here, hardwired by our understanding of God, whether God is here, anywhere, but it's hardwired to our spiritual being. There is a connection going on, it's intertwined. So for instance, if you get Sandy to come round, who's an electrician, he will advise you about what hardware you need so your house is safe and properly rewired. Whether it's the electric box or the proper wiring, and he can do all of that. I think that's not, I'm not getting a commission, I'm not getting a freebie or anything like that. I wish I did, but hey, so you've got all of that going on. And it's the same with this psalmist and for ourselves, that we are spiritually hardwired and we need to waken up to that as a reality check. So if gratitude speaks of this strong connection, this reality check where we are hardwired, here is the thing what this psalmist unpacks for us now, where we plug in the socket and we begin to see the power surge into our lives. And this is what happens. It's this power that surges in. And I'm going to give you classic presentation with it's all ours from now on, okay? It's all ours. So you go away over lunchtime, you test each other. Do you remember the ours, okay? All right, that's what's, you're thinking, no, I'm not going to do that. But you are, inside you are, I know you are. So what happens here is I'm going to take them in order, but they're all kind of connected because that's what gratitude does. And so I'm only doing it in the order as it comes in the psalm, because that's what the psalmist chose to do. So the first one here is ritual, okay? So you've got ritual going on here. The psalmist speaks, he says, I will bow down toward your holy temple. Now the temple was, for the psalmist, a physical presence of focus. It reminded them constantly of the presence of God and they committed to praying towards the temple. Now the temple's gone, but God and Jesus' followers have been told that we are now the temple. So how do we help ourselves through God's help to focus on God, like the psalmist focused on the holy temple. And ritual is an expression that outwardly expresses that focus. You see, routine is the simplest form of ritual, and we have it throughout our lives. Now, I'm not going to ask or take a poll how many people brush their teeth, because that's your business, but a small task has a big impact. A small task in ritual has a big impact. And what happens in the physical life for us as human beings can always help us in our spiritual life and gives us clarity and order and focus. And we can benefit from that. I still hear my mother's voice when she quotes back to me the old hymn, "Count your blessings, name them one by one." And so when you do that ritually, it gets you into focus. Well, I have things I've got to give thanks for. So, some suggestions which you probably do already. Do you give thanks for a meal, whether you're with others or by yourself? Do you give thanks for your meal? Do you open up your wardrobe and give thanks for all the choice you have before you? Have you given thanks that you can choose between a red dress and a blue dress? That's my wife's wardrobe, not mine. But it's a good habit to get into. And maybe we need to reflect on the rituals in life and have that good habit of giving thanks. Now, we can drift out of a habit, but rituals can help us lean in and be a reminder of where our attitude should be. So if the ritual feels empty, that's a question on us, not the ritual. Because it should get us closer to thinking about thankfulness. But ritual on its own is not enough, as we see from the psalmist. It can start to be a bit hollow, and when that happens, it crumbles and just becomes words. So we can see from the psalmist again about relationship. It says here, "I will praise your name for your unfailing love and your faithfulness, for you have so exalted your solemn decree that it surpasses your fame. When I called, you answered me. You greatly emboldened me." It's an NIV, but it's slightly different from your Pew Bible, but needless to say, it's still the same version. But what we have here is a repetition, and it's intensely personal. I will give thanks. I will sing. I will bow down. When I called to you, increase my strength. Though I walk, you keep me safe. Shall save me, fulfill your purpose in me. These are all in through the psalm. So even when we come here, even in this public act of worship, it's intensely and immensely personal. God is speaking to you. And that relationship is built up in an understanding, and the psalmist gets this as well. He understands his God. He has a perspective that gives gratitude into his life. And just like this kind of picture insinuates where someone's asking for something, but the relationship seems a bit one way here, that can often happen in the way that we treat God. Now, we talk about SOS prayers or shopping list prayers. They have their place, but if your relationship or your conversation you had with the person you share your life with purely was when you picked up the phone and they purely asked you for something that they wanted, you begin to find it's quite predictable, that relationship. When I was in York Hill Hospital, I have often talked about it with people about trying to expand the conversation with God. So they got to know about the person they were speaking to as much. It was important to say, please heal my child. Because sometimes things didn't change. And then they get certain ideas about God. So we need ritual. We need relationship. But we also know it begins to reach when we combine these two. And it comes out in that verse 4. May all the kings of the earth praise you, Lord, when they hear what you have decreed. May they sing of the ways of the Lord, for the glory of the Lord is great. When you have ritual and relationship closely linked together, it takes us out of ourselves and we begin to see out into the world and where we reach and how God's thankfulness and gratitude can be known. It's not something it should be kept for ourselves. And we may not know how that will happen or if it actually does happen. I recall one situation, this guy spoke to me and he said, you know, I just love your attitude towards life. I was trying to think, what have I done? And it was a way back when I was 20-something, and before I was married and before I was mature, whatever it was, and I was cycling in Basingstoke, which is basically the English equivalent of Cumbernauld. And it's just long distances between one place to the other. If you have a car, it's great. But if you've got a bike, it's a disaster. So he says, you just kept smiling as you were cycling along. I still think I was grimacing while I was cycling along. But he took it as I was smiling. But you don't realize the impact and infectious nature that we can have if ritual and relationship are in tune with each other. When that happens, there is a challenge. And that is the element of reframing something. And it comes out in our next verse because gratitude has a challenge because it enters into a thankless world. How many people have you come across where there's no thanks? I remember having a conversation and I just dropped the word, you know, I just feel blessed with what I've been given in my life. Just drop that in there. And there was a computer specialist turned around and says, nah, I don't get that at all. Anything that I have is because of me. He had no one to thank but himself because he says, there isn't a God, so why do I don't need to thank anyone because it's all my effort of what I've done. There's a logic there. But it just shows you how it's framed in his life. But conversely for us and for the psalmist is that when we face a thankless world, we have to reframe it. Let me show you in the verses that pop up here. Oh, they don't pop up. They do. Okay. Though the Lord is exalted, he looks kindly on the lowly. Though lofty, he sees them from afar. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you preserve my life. And the key word there, which is highlighted, is though. Let me turn it onto ourselves and for our own circumstances and use the word though. Though my job is under threat, my God will keep me secure. I'll say a few more. though my health is. What's working out in your head at the moment? Though someone hurt me, I know that my God loves me so much. Though my church is, how does that sentence finish for you? Though my circumstances have changed, and you begin to see through the psalmist that he knows that he, as filled with gratitude, lives in a thankless world. And yet he reframes how he is positioned in that world. And the word though really tests that in our own very beings. And it is a journey. But then there's release. The Lord will vindicate me. Your love, Lord, endures forever. The version, that it's still the NIV, but the word that came out, and it's a good word that was used by Denise's reading, was you fulfill your purposes. It's actually a very rare word in the Old Testament. But it just shows you that God is committing in and leading in. One other version puts it this way. Don't quit. Finish the job. That's your five R's. I just want to read to you. It's a book here. It's a great book. Just love it. If you're ever wanting a gentle, easing in, but thoughtful, reflective way of doing a quiet time, it's called The Reluctant Disciple. There's also something called The Grateful Disciple, written by a guy called David Wells. And there's some good reads in it. And if you read it, you'll probably see where I get my illustrations from. But it's just a gem of a book. Have a look at it and see what the reviews are. He's a Catholic teacher, and I listened at a conference, but he's just a straightforward family guy. And he picks up on something that happened to him. Not high-powered, but something could happen to any of us. But the way he puts it really caught my attention. This is how he starts in this particular paragraph. I'm sitting in the lounge at home. It's a typical November evening. Dark and damp outside. A fire warming us, a television half entertaining us, drawn curtains keeping the winter outside. Alison curled up on the sofa, lost in her book. Sam is playing a game on the computer, campaigning for world domination. Matt and Emily are arguing over the remote control for the television. I'm sitting there among them, unengaged by the television, and wondering how to motivate myself to do something more productive. There's nothing extraordinary about any of this. It's just a Tuesday night at home in November. What happens next is hard to describe. It's a moment of grace that I haven't conjured up or deserved, unannounced. I'm visited by a deep sense of joy. Why this joy has fallen upon me, I have no idea. I'm taken by surprise by it. It transforms a mundane scene into something meaningful. It's as though I'm looking at my life through different eyes. While I can't hear any words, what I can feel happening is a revelation to this effect. David, this is good as your life gets. If you don't see it now, you never will. I have an overwhelming sense of gratitude for the sense I'm looking at, and it moves me to tears. My family are together. I think, and we are safe and alive. With the joy comes a tremendous sense of appreciation for what I already have. All I can do is say thank you, which I do. No one else is aware of this personal epiphany. Strange as it seems, this awareness left me just as quickly as it arrived. No sooner did I sense it than it had gone. Stranger still, I didn't try to hold on to it or hanker after it and be given the gift to see briefly my life as it truly is, a thing of great beauty. It was enough to know it, even for a short while. This joy was not the product of wild bursts of adventure, the eye-opening travel opportunities I enjoy, or the possibility of one day swimming with turtles. It was a deeper joy, and it made me grateful for a mundane Tuesday evening in November. Where you sit on a regular Sunday morning, as you sit there, you now sit on holy ground. God is close up and is looking at you and sees you. Do we need to remind ourselves of the immediacy of the God that we believe in as a Jesus follower, not distant, but right there? What are those moments in our lives where we need to have that sense of release, that gratitude elevates our lives to suddenly realize the God that we are hardwired to? I think some of us indeed might need to retrieve that right now. And this is the moment for you to do so. For this psalmist to speak right into your heart and to know that he cares for you and has not abandoned you. He has not quit on you, and he will finish the job. Maybe we need to remember that God is faithful, constant, and not fickle. Maybe we need to be intently interested in a life of gratitude that shrinks our self-centeredness and embraces a Christ-centeredness. There's a reality check. And does that Holy Spirit plug into your life, and do you surge with all that I've shared from this psalm this morning? Where is your personal relationship with God? If you need it to be right before God, this is the time to do it. Do not delay. If you're looking at life in a jaundiced way, start reframing it through gratitude. And realize the reach you can have when you weave into the rituals and routines of your life an attentiveness to your relationship with God.